Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, we are in paper 55, section 11. One of those papers with lots of sections. So section 11, which is old single column, page 635. All right, I don't think we need a lot of preface for this one. You'll see that their first paragraph actually sort of tees up the preface that we want to bring out. But just remember, we're finishing out this paper with them going up the hierarchy of light and life. On the collective level, so that we reset with the planet settled in light and life, and then we had the whole local system, a planet settled in light and life, and then the whole local system, and then the whole constellation, and then finally we finished up last week with the whole local universe settled in light and life. So as you can see by the title of this, we're going to continue to move up the hierarchy. As you're going to see, there's this little twist that they throw in about that issue in the first paragraph here. So let's just read it, and I'll explain what I mean.
11, the minor and major sector stages. Minor and major sectors of the superuniverse do not figure directly in the plan of being settled in light and life. Such an evolutionary progression pertains primarily to the local universe as a unit and concerns only the components of a local universe. A superuniverse is settled in light and life when all of its component local universes are thus perfected. But not one of the seven superuniverses has attained a level of progression even approaching this.
All right, so that last little thing, remember, if you've often wondered, is it the case where the first super universe is almost completely settled and the seventh is lagging way behind all the others? No, they're all, moving roughly together, as you can kind of tell from that. Okay, so the key you can see in there is that little qualifier they're reminding of that. That technically a super universe is not settled in light and life when its 10 major sectors are settled in light and life, but when its local universes are settled in light and life, when its 100,000 local universes are settled in light and life. Okay? So you go, oh, okay. In other words, it's really more of a universe of local universes sort of a situation. Right. Then just a very narrowly confined hierarchy. And, so you should ask, okay, well, why is that? We figured that out before. If you look at the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, again, remember how what was happening with the seven stages of light and life on an individual world, that's a microcosm of what's happening in this collective hierarchy of getting settled in light and life. And so, the two are parallel phenomena, which they'll remind you of here in a little bit again. But we know that's the case. And so remember what they told us about what the inhabitants of the worlds were endeavoring to encompass in terms of relationship to the sevenfold as you went through the stages on the planet. That with the second stage of light and life, they were working on that first level of the sevenfold, the one where you have the master creator sons, the master physical controllers, and the creative mother spirits. I've got the cosmic levels, right? See, that's the first level. There's that zeroth level underneath. that I remember I pointed out, you could see them alluding to that relationship with the master physical controllers having a more definitive presence in the first stage of light and life on the world. Okay, but you know, we haven't talked about transferring that recognition to what we've been doing here. You know, you could go back and reflect on some of the things they said here in these three previous sections about the local system, the constellation, and the local universe. So, when that local system is settled in light and life, that settling is in the context of the whole that is a creative mother spirit. And when the constellation is settled in light and life, that's in the context of the whole being that of the reflective mother spirits of that single super universe. You know, remember with the constellation, you're really definitively establishing that linkage between the ancients of days of the super universe and the most highs of the constellation, right? I mean, that single super universe, those three ancients of days are in, is the womb of the reflective mother spirits. Okay? So that's why that, that more definitive relationship is there, because it's in that wholeness, individual super universe wholeness. But when you get to the local universe stage we just read, right, I mean, that's where you're up with the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days. That collective super universe level, or, remember how we pointed out another way of talking about the collective super universe level is the level of the universe of local universes, and all the local universes together. And so we've reached that stage already when we got to the local universe stage, where the wholeness is that wholeness of the creative mother agencies. And that's why, if you remember, one, two, three, four, five paragraphs back in that previous section, remember how they said the finality core now, for the first time, acknowledges the jurisdiction of an extra paradise authority, the Supreme Council. Remember that Supreme Council of unlimited authority that they introduced? Heretofore, the finalities have recognized no supervision this side of paradise. Okay. Remember who is minding finalities. Right, they've transcended their individual super universes, and they're up there in that collective universe mind womb of the creative mother agencies. That's where they've been, since they became finaliters and started going about the different super universes. So, see, once the local universe is settled in light and life, and you're in the context of that wholeness that they live in, that's when they finally recognize authority outside of, center of all things. I see. So it's always logical. You can always think it through and see how everything is, synchronized like that. So, obviously, now when we move into the minor sector and subsequent stages, it's predicated on that. You really are in that context of the universe of local universes. And so it really is that, the rest of the way. And, a super universe is settled in light and life when all of its component local universes are thus perfected. See, that's fundamentally why. Because of what wholeness the parts are coordinating within. Okay? Nonetheless, you still are paralleling up the sevenfold, just like we did before when we went beyond the fourth stage on an individual planet. So we've got those subsequent levels in the sevenfold that you're synchronizing with, and you're going to see when they talk about the minor sector and major sector, and it's going, wow, that's almost like exactly what they said about the fifth and sixth stages on an individual world. So let's just read that and see what it says here.
The minor sector age, as far as observations can penetrate, the fifth or minor sector stage of stabilization has exclusively to do with physical status and with the coordinate settling of the 100 associated local universes in the established circuits of the superuniverse. Apparently, none but the power centers and their associates are concerned in these realignments of the material creation.
So remember, that was exactly what they said about the fifth stage on an individual planet, that it was about the master physical controllers, the power beings, taking, you know, full possession of every automaton of the world and having their way with it. Okay, and really starting to crystallize the physical issues, you know, relative to eternity. So you've got the same thing, just on a bigger level. And it's not just, as you might think here, well, it's a minor sector stage, you say. Isn't that the, you know, and there's three levels in the super universe? You have, you know, sort of physical, you know, mindal and spiritual. I mean, isn't that why it's about the physical stuff? Well, yeah, yes. I mean, that's, you know, that's not going to be at odds with what's going on. But fundamentally, the reason is we've moved up to the next notch, where the womb that things are happening in is the, you know, the womb of the entire finite, of the universal mother. Okay? But you don't just have the universal mother, you've got the other aspect of it, the Almighty Supreme. Right? And you know, and so in terms of, you know, as far as observations can penetrate, okay, all we can really sort of directly see is, you know, that summation and influence that is the Almighty Supreme part, half of the picture. But notice how they, what they say here. So it has exclusively to do with the physical status and with the coordinate settling of the 100 associated local universe. Where does that, that's reminding you, it's, you don't just have the Almighty Supreme, the coordination they're referring to there is the Universal Mother, right? You know, what you directly observe, you know, that is Almighty Supreme-like, right, has this subtle context that it's in, this focalizing influence, this coordinating influence that is the Universal Mother. You know, they didn't directly point that out last time, but here, you know, they do. So, you know, you are moving up into that next level of wholeness, right? Hence the word coordinate. Okay, so it is indeed, you know, just moving up the notches of the sevenfold like before. And we can turn back, even though they didn't bring that out before, you know, remember before, all they said is the readjustments of this stage of settled existence pertain almost entirely to the physical domains and are of primary concern to the master physical controllers, period. That's all they said before. Right? No mention of the coordination thing. But you can turn that around now, right? Because it's not just on some huge scale, you know, it's starting to seem huge to us, like a minor sector, that you can have a focalization of the Universal Mother. There's no limit to her focalizing ability. Yeah, you know, it's not like she can only focalize in the context of the whole finite. She can bring that down to a focus on an individual world. Okay? And her wholeness can be delivered, you know, in a downward projected fashion onto that one world, and none of the worlds around it in the local system. Right? So, you know, Mother always has that ability. I mean, the creative Mother Spirit, you know, doesn't just function equally throughout the whole of the local universe. She's focalized a very specific ministry of mind to this planet and this planet only. And the same is true of the next planet over and the next planet over. And, you know, each world gets a precise focalization of her mind ministry. The adjutant ministry here is different than the adjutant ministry on the next planet over. Okay? I mean, yes, there is the wholeness, but Right? Just remember, when you're dealing with Mother Deity, it's always has this very fundamental vertical aspect to it. Right? It's not just at a single level. Yep.
How would the adjutant ministry differ from planet to planet in progression?
It's got to attune to the precisely different biology on each world. Okay. Every world has a slightly different biology, you know, and that adjutant mind is attuned to the genetics of that world, and that's different from world to world. And so the attunement is different from world to world. She has to dial in and focus it precisely on that particular genetics, on that particular world. So you just reminded of that more and more, the more you begin to appreciate just the functionality of Mother Deity. You always should be looking for that. You know, there's a ceiling to a given mother's function, but she's not just a ceiling. Right? She's the whole depth. Right?
You can surmise that you've got to exhaust every potential of differential. And you're going to do that times all the local universes and then all the universe of universe. I mean, they're not going to, every world's an opportunity for that.
Right. And, it's not enough to just have two worlds that are different. There has to be something transcendent of those two worlds to be the means for a super additive consequence, so that it is actually a potential, that differential, not just a meaningless differential.
Right.
The Mother Deity is always the way for there to be a super additive consequence.
Right.
Every
one of those has a purpose.
Yeah. When you combine hydrogen and oxygen and get the totally different properties of water, that's because of Mother Deity. Right? Anything, that involves anything besides an infinite number of island universes is because of Mother Deity. Right? Without her presence, some Mother Deity presence, you couldn't bring two hydrogen atoms together, let alone an oxygen atom too. Right? There wouldn't be any. Every hydrogen atom would be a universe unto itself.
Right.
Right? Let alone all the internals of the hydrogen atom, right? See, that have to be coordinated together too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really, the life carriers are a function thereof, as well as the Adams and Eves. Of course, they bring their own unique biology, but it's all the working of it.
Yeah, remember how that works. You have, first of all, a unique biology of each local system, which is embodied in, each set of Adam and Eve, each set of material sons and daughters, right? So there's sort of the ceiling of the biology in each local system, right? But then it's downstepped into, roughly 1,000 different variations of that local universe genetic, or local system genetics. It's all this complexity. You start with a given, relative unity, and you downstep it into as much individuality as possible at every level.
Yeah, you're going to exhaust the finite.
And once you take a certain high ceiling and individuate it as much as possible, then in the context of that differentiated, it can become a new ceiling that is subsequently further differentiable, et cetera. So this is, it's this whole like fractal sort of pattern. Branching downward individuation, like an upside down tree, right? Yep.
David Jones has a fairly long question. If we were searching via telescope for this planetary status in the universe, what kind of star do you think we would be watching for? Presumably, white dwarf or a red giant, what kind of sun would we be looking for that would be eternalized or completely stabilized in this fifth stage of light and life?
Okay, so there's a couple things. First of all, a lot of ideas of red giants being old is not correct. They're actually young. Set that complexity aside. The only reason any star goes to a white dwarf and eventually to a black dwarf, you know, which current science, you know, doesn't think the universe is old enough to produce, but is if that star is not in an inhabited solar system. You know, that's a dying star. A star gets, eternalized when it's still in prime form, right? And is, exactly what the inhabited planet or planets in that solar system need. Right? So, and we would have no idea, we would just see run-of-the-mill star. We have no idea that it's eternalized and is trillions of years older than we think, the universe is, right? it's just going to look like another star to us. The thing that you might start to wonder if you could get some hint that you're moving into this sort of a stage is, we brought this up earlier, not tonight, but, in previous sessions, this whole question of at what point does all the extraneous matter in a region start to get cleared away, right? There's no extraneous matter in the central universe, right? There's no clouds of dust between the Havona worlds. There isn't a single stray gas molecule between the Havona worlds. There's nothing, except the worlds. And, at some point, all the extraneous stuff, including, like we mentioned, all the extraneous planets in a solar system, something's got to be done with all that stuff. We have no idea what. It's hard to even imagine how this is going to work. But you could wonder if, what if you saw a region of the Milky Way, which is hard to do because we can hardly see distance into the Milky Way because all the gas and dust, right? But maybe somehow you could start to become suspicious that some region seemed to be awfully clear of, interstellar medium. That might be, you might be curious. Maybe that's a region that's starting to be really cleared up. And, it might, of course, it might just be a region that coincidentally doesn't have a lot of stuff, for other reasons too. But, so it's hard to pin down. But I would think, that starting in this stage, what formerly was kind of a star cloud within the big galaxy, like in our case, the Milky Way, one of those minor sectors is, swinging around the center, is this little, cloud going around the center of the Milky Way galaxy, that, it would be more of simply a star cloud and not, stars and a whole bunch of other crap.
Debris cloud.
To be crude about it, right? That's probably the only thing I could, there's no way for us to observe for the lengths of time, until this planet is, a million years older than it is right now, say, and we've been observing all that time, for us to be able to watch regions of stars and notice that they don't seem to have sort of randomized proper motions anymore. They all seem to be really locked into some crystal-like thing that's going around the Milky Way, right? Because that's what they're, referring to here, this whole, stage of stabilization, as they say there. Right? You remember they mentioned that with just the local universe, that things were getting really locked into a pretty, fixed relationship in terms of orbiting the center of Orvinton. Even more so now. So, that would be a way that you could, also detect it if, you could watch it over, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of years, and it's like, wow, those stars just aren't like going every which direction anymore. those are really just kind of streaming along in a nice uniform fashion. Okay, so they've been really settled in. So that's the kind of things. Again, you got to remember when you start thinking about astronomy like that, an awful lot of current astronomy is false conclusions. As the revelators are trying to teach us by giving us founding initial assumptions that, if you have any way to sort of check them with what we think right now, you go, oh, well, that doesn't agree with what we think right now. Yeah, okay, that's, right, you can't figure out the initial issues, so we're giving them to you. Now proceed with those initial assumptions and re-deduce all the things you've been deducing. And you'll discover that you have almost all your distances incorrect, and on and on and on, right? We're way off on our guesses on how far things are away and stuff, because it's like no one can lay a ruler out and tell you how far it is to, Rigel or something, right? We just have to make our best educated guesses, or how far it is to the Andromeda Galaxy. No one has laid a tape measure out, right? We're bound to be way off, and as the Revelators point out, you're getting farther and farther, out of whack, every decade that you try to guesstimate it.
Yeah.
Right? You're not converging on the correct answer. You're diverging from the correct answer.
Yeah.
Right? So
your first attempts were as good as they got.
Yeah. And just notice, recall how historically, your ancient book readers have that totally turned around, right? They, treat our current science as divine and find the book a revelation to be an error. I mean, that's absurd. It's totally absurd. Okay. All right. So we've got the minor sector stage, and see, we've got that, this real definitive almighty supreme thing going on with the physical stabilization in the context, the coordination of the universal mother. Okay. What happens next?
The major sector age. Concerning the sixth stage, or major sector stabilization, we can only conjecture, since none of us have witnessed such an event. Nevertheless, we can postulate much concerning the administrative and other readjustments which would probably accompany such an advanced status of inhabited worlds and their universe groupings. Since the minor sector status has to do with coordinate physical equilibrium, we infer that major sector unification will be concerned with certain new intellectual levels of attainment, possibly some advanced achievements in the supreme realization of cosmic wisdom.
Okay, so again, you can see how they're just paralleling. Remember what they said about the sixth stage on an individual world. It says it witnesses the development of new functions of the mind circuits of the realm. Cosmic wisdom seems to become constitutive in the universe ministry of mind. Right, see the exact same phrase, cosmic wisdom. Right, you can see what they're doing here. Like they said, it's not like anyone has observed a major sector settled in line life. All they have to go on is the parallel to the sixth stage on an individual world.
Yep.
Nothing else they can do, but just try to draw as much parallel as they can and contextualize it as best they can out of that limited individual world domain. Right, so it's going to be mindal, fundamentally. You know that much. That's what the 10 major sectors of a super universe are, is that 10 fundamental phases of mind in that super universe. Right?
Yeah.
It's going to have something to do with that. And remember, just like we looked at before, when you look up the levels of the sevenfold, right, you go above the universal mother here, and ta-da, you have the infinite mother spirit, right? The infinite mind. Right, you have that, even from a seven absolutes of infinity perspective, right, you've got the conjoint actor that's the absolute mind.
Yeah.
Right? So, right, again, it all makes complete sense. So that's really all they can say is, just as much as we can easily deduce. It doesn't take a revelator to figure that out. Once you see the pattern, you could basically have said everything they said right there.
Mm-hmm.
We have just as much to go on as they do. Only now that we have the revelation, right, we have as much to go on as they do. All right, so let's see. Was there anything else in there? Let's see. I think we spoke to everything there. Yeah, and just, you know, notice the last sentence. Possibly some advanced achievements in the supreme realization of cosmic wisdom. You know, they're always very humble, right, to not speak, you know, any absolute certainty when they haven't directly observed something. Doesn't matter, you know, if the highest being that they can talk to has told them such and so. They don't just believe it because so and so said so, right? You know, if it's just, you know, some high being told them so, they'll say, well, possibly, you know, or, you know, maybe it's going to be like this. I mean, they, you know, they're not mindless believers like humans love to be. Right? Just turn to some established authority and turn their brain off, right?
Yeah.
You know, so just, you know, always notice how we'll see that in the next section too. A great example of that. Okay, so let's see what else. Oh, you got some? Yep.
Real quick one from Kermit. Does this mean that minor sector stage has been achieved somewhere?
Yeah, right, so you can tell by the differential of how they're talking about that, that right, there are some minor sectors. You know, if not in their super universe, you know, in some other super universe, and they've talked to people from that other super universe and, you know, have gotten some details about it. Right? So,
so it's not all conjecture.
Yeah, the minor sector is not all conjecture, right? But the major sector, yes. I mean, everyone is in, there's no major sector in any seven of the seven super universes has been settled.
No precedent.
Right, there's, yeah, so there's nothing direct. So all they have is looking, you know, working with the parallel. Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, it was worth going into that extended thing about, you know, what might we observe with a minor sector settled, right? I mean, theoretically, that might be observed. You know, don't expect it anytime soon, because, you know, like, just remember, you know, except for the Milky Way, when you look at the night sky with your eyes, you basically aren't seeing any stars that are outside of the local universe. Right? And it's a very localized thing that, you know, only with a telescope are you penetrating to any deeper depth. And you can't penetrate much to any deeper depth because you start to get such long columns of gas and dust that you're trying to look through that everything goes opaque. Right? Yeah. So it's very difficult for us to, you know, let alone, you know, the really easy way to do this, like the relatives tell you, if you were to be able to get above the Milky Way and look down on it, you could clearly see the 10 pi wedges, the 10 major sectors, right? See if you can find some, you know, astronomy article about how the Milky Way looks like 10 pi wedges. No. and they say also, if you really know what you're looking for, you can see all the minor sectors, right? In other words, they're quasi-individuated, like you said, like little star clouds, right? So you can, it's like, well, that's that minor sector, and that's that minor sector. You can basically distinguish them. So, you know, if you were above and watched it for a long, long time, you know, stayed up there for a million years and watched things move around, right, you could see, wow, that minor sector is, like, really locked in, right? There's just no readjustment stuff going on to take into account that this galaxy is being incorporated into the Milky Way now or anything like that. I mean, think about that. You know, in the not-too-distant future, the large and small Magellanic clouds have got to get incorporated into the Milky Way.
Yeah.
So you got to bring those big collections of stars into the Milky Way without messing up what's going on with this settledness stuff.
Pretty good gauge for how far it is.
Yeah, right. If you still have that large a collection, like the Large Magellanic Cloud, I mean, that big a collection of stars that needs to get incorporated in yet, okay, you can't have anything too settled yet, most likely.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
An obvious observation that the our present-day astronomers really will never be able to get it right without revelation,
right.
And
I mean,
time.
Right. I mean, they think that the large and small Magellanic clouds are in orbit about the Milky Way. No, they're falling into the Milky Way. They think that the globular clusters are really, really old stars that have drifted out of the disk because they're so old and have collected into spherical blobs, are in orbit about the Milky Way. No, they're relatively young stars that are drifting into the Milky Way. I mean, we have so, you know, poor understanding of this stuff. Yeah.
Now, planets that haven't suffered the rebellion and, of course, the default, they're probably in a better position to have a better grasp on some of these cosmic insights, basically, due to the fact they have the prince. They have the materials, sons and daughters, to teach.
Well, yes and no. I mean, for those of you in the webinar, he's wondering if you haven't had a rebellion and a default and this sort of stuff, I mean, are people in a better position to have a better sense of the big picture? You got to remember, if everything is going normally, there is a purposeful subscribing of a circumscribing of awareness, you know, in a very methodical way. Remember how, you know, we talk about that a lot. He's like, okay, we're only going to tell you about the local system now. Okay, now we'll finally tell you about the constellation, right? And now we'll finally tell you, right? I mean, normally you're not told about the architects of the master universe until the local universe is settled in light and life.
Yeah.
Right? I've got it in my lap right now.
Yeah.
See, so in some ways, I've got an awareness of the big picture that worlds, you know, that have just entered their local universe being settled in light and life don't have yet.
Right.
And that's, you know, who knows how many hundreds of billions of years in the future or whatever, right?
Yeah, and again, an example of the dire emergency that's...
Yeah. So again, there's all these things, you know, the last will be first and the first shall be last. And I mean, who's ahead of whom? Everything is as it should be. There's balancing, there's compensating things. We, in many ways, we dwell in greater enlightenment than worlds that have been chugging along precisely spot on, you know, throughout their whole existence. Right? So, yeah, who's dark and who's light? We always have a tendency to fixate on what we don't have. And we totally lose sight of all the things that we have.
Yeah.
Right? It's always regretting the past, whining over the present, vainly hoping for the future. Right.
I've got that laminated someplace.
Right. I mean, people will much more quickly fixate on how horrible it is, you know, that we had a rebellion and a fault, regretting the past like that, if only that hadn't happened. Like, no, if that hadn't happened, you wouldn't have this book. Right? You know, you wouldn't have had Michael come here.
Right?
But again, when all is said and done, they give lip service to Michael, but they're really saying, Michael Schmeichel, you know, you're Rangibuck, who cares?
Right.
You know, woe is us, we had a rebellion.
Yeah.
Right?
How much must we endure?
Right. There's no surer sign of a fancy animal, you know, with no genuine religious consciousness than someone who's always regretting the past and whining over the present. Just listen for it. Right? It's a rare person who has any spiritual consciousness on this planet right now who isn't constantly regretting the past and whining over the present. You know, slavery, or, you know, on and on and on. There's always something we should regret. And always something that's not perfect today like it should be. That's all you hear. That's why this book is in my lap.
Yeah.
Right? You have almost no religious consciousness. You've got spiritual consciousness, right? In overabundance. Right? But where is the tempering, contextualizing, stabilizing influence of genuine religious consciousness? A lot of stuff that's called religion, not really religion. It's easy to tell it's not. Doesn't bear any of the fruits of genuine religion.
Yeah.
It's just the unchecked fruits of spiritual agitation.
Yeah.
people's minds. Right? That's why this book is, that's the emergency. You've got lots of people who are attuned into that spiritual agitation of wanting ever faster progression. But no one is helping the religious guardians, that group of master seraphim. No one is being their assistants in trying to properly contain and mitigate overrunning ourselves, you know, getting ahead of ourselves. That influence is almost non-existent on the planet now. Everyone wants to do what Lucifer wanted to do, to get to the end point as fast as possible. Which means you're all going to run off the upholding hand of the Supreme and everything's going to collapse. Right? We don't have sovereignty there. Right? We don't get to dictate how fast we get to light and life. Right? We either keep the slow, steady pace of the Supreme, or we collapse, we run off the upholding hand of supremacy, and we have to start all the way back from square one.
Right? Reestablish upholding from
bundle. I mean, we have absolute free will that can overrule supreme influence. Right. Right? The Supreme can't stop you from running off the upholding hand of the finite. You totally, outrank, the Supreme. The Supreme Being is not absolute. You have an absolute dimension of your personality. So we've got to remember that. It's so easy to get way ahead of ourselves. And it's not that what you're envisioning is wrong. You're just trying to make it happen too soon. The ideal is perfect. The problem is you're trying to do it too soon. Right? That's the only problem. That's the emergency has nothing to do with anything else except that simple fact that we're trying to do ultimately good things too soon. Right? And no one understands that good can be turned to bad by doing it too soon. Everyone thinks, oh, no. Yeah. No.
Are we still in the first rotation of the religion age? I remember some of them have been rotated, but are they still in the first? Their original core?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I know there's some mention of it.
I guess we could quickly flip up there and look. Let's see, the religious guardians. No, the core now functioning on your rancher is the fifth, thus to serve.
So no help from us, so they're rotating.
They keep rotating out. Maybe the next batch will find some clever way to, no matter how many times they rotate, they needed to send an emergency revelation.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're starting to feel really alone. It's like, well, we've got our little group and no one else.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
We'll help here.
Yeah. All right. Okay, we digressed a little bit, but always helps to reinforce some of these things. Okay, so look back here where we are. This notice again in that paragraph. Since the minor sector status has to do with coordinate physical equilibrium, see, just stressing that again. So, remember they can't give you just direct things about the mother hierarchy. You have to discover that, synthesize the truth of the mother out of the whole of the revelation. The mother is the whole, not a part. So, there's no truth to talking about the mother in a part, in a sentence, in a paragraph. The only truth of the mother is in the whole. So in order to be a revelation of truth, they can't just, distill it into a paragraph, because then you're just going to anthropomorphize it. You're going to think of Osiris and Isis, and we're just talking about a parallel thing to the father hierarchy, only it's got different body parts.
Yeah.
Right, and that's just not the truth of it. So, all right, so just always really notice. It's only when you start to notice all these curious little things thrown in there like that. It's like, wait, why did they throw that word in? What are they trying to tell me there? know, that eventually, you know, things start to percolate in your mind. And, okay. And finally, the Trinity and the Mother start to distill out of, you know, all of the discussion of parts. All right, let's keep going here.
We arrive at conclusions regarding the readjustments which have probably attend,
which would
probably attend the realization of hitherto unattended levels of evolutionary progress by observing the results of such achievements on the individual worlds and in the experiences of individual mortals living on these older and highly developed spheres.
Okay, so most of that I've already, you know, brought out. One little thing, you notice they threw in one little thing, not just the parallel to the stages of light and life on an individual world, but, you know, they say, and in the experiences of individual mortals, you know, dot, dot, dot. Okay, again, coincidentally, on the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, it isn't just the sevenfold chart, right? You know, paralleling, moving up cosmic levels, right? You've got moving inward, if you will, right, in psychic circles. You know, those are cosmic levels too, of course. So obviously they're going to parallel moving up cosmic levels if you just remind yourself that psychic circles are, you know, in a vertical analogy or cosmic levels. Right. So as you're moving up those cosmic levels of psychic circle nature, right, you're moving towards your personal light and life.
Right.
So, you know, and again, you know, we've, you know, whenever we talk about the psychic circles and we want to think about them in depth a little more, I bring this chart out to remind you. It's like, you know, what are you in parallel to? You know, like, well, when you're a third circler, what are you parallel to on a, you know, on a cosmic scale?
Yeah.
Right? That's the supreme level. Right? And that's why normally you can't have an adjuster until you get to the third circle. Because the adjuster can't penetrate down below the supreme level, so you've got to get up to it. Right? It's only when you have the spirit of truth functioning as the spirit of unification, right, to bridge that gap between the supreme level and whatever sub-supreme level you're on in terms of your ascension to individual progress, I should say, to light and life, right, and bridge that gap. But otherwise, you got to get up. See, so you know, when you start to use this parallel that they're referring to right there, you can work back and forth. You can learn more about the psychic circle stages, and you can carry it the other way, like they're just talking about, and learn more about the hierarchy of light and life, you know, even in this collective mode.
Okay. You know, it's kind of interesting. Adjusters can't get sub-supreme experience any other way, but with mortals that are encircled in this way.
Right. They don't drop down to the finite experiential level until they fuse. Right? They're stuck up there. Right? You drag them down. You know, and when you do, when you fuse them, you know, that's why, you know, no longer you have effective infinite speed, right?
Right?
Because you've drug them down into the finite. Now the fact, you know, that fused fact is now subject to finite physics. Where it was transcendent before.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
What a drag.
Yeah. It reminds you of why they call them imprisoned and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, even at fusion, there's still a quote-unquote imprisonment.
Lockdown.
You know, they don't see it that way, right? You know, but you know, technically, they've gone from being everywhere to being, you know, locked into a, you know, very small locality, you know, within the finite.
Frozen in time.
Frozen into space and time, yeah. You know, and perforce, you know, can only, you know, go to a different location, you know, by riding on the back of you, the boat anchor.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, see that, you know, when it finally dawned on me that, you know, the psychic circles or cosmic levels, and it's like, oh, well, it should parallel the, you know, the levels of cosmic mothers, you know, and realize that chart. You know, you start to then notice, like, oh, yeah, they actually refer to that fact right there, you know, in other places. But it, you know, a lot of those things in the book don't become apparent until you've figured them out yourself. Yeah. You know, and then you go, oh, yeah, I know what they're talking about there. Because I've already deduced that fact. Yeah. Well, first I synthesized, then I deduced. Yep.
Winston's wondering, so how does the spirit of truth help in the psychic circles?
Like I was just referring, I kind of brushed over it. But, you know, if I'm a, I start out as a six-year-old as a seventh circler. But I know right away I get an adjuster now. So, but wait a minute. The, I'm you know, hearing it to chart out again, you know. The adjuster can only penetrate down to, you know, what is effectively a third circler, or this, you know, as I'm calling it, the fourth cosmic level here, right? But I'm clear down on, you know, the zeroth cosmic level, you know, as a seventh circler, right? So there's this huge gap, you know. I mean, magic doesn't, you know, penetrate through four, five, and six circles here, right? That's what the spirit of truth, like I said, functioning not as the spirit of truth, but that spirit ministry functioning as the spirit of unification, right? Unification between the adjuster and you, yeah. Right? And it continues to do that as you move up until you actually get to third circle, okay, and then you don't need the spirit of unification to bridge the divide anymore, sure. Right? Yeah. Literally, you know, now that ministry is the way that the adjuster and you can relate to one another. Right? Without the way, there is no way. You know, it's utterly pointless to put an adjuster in a seven circler without the spirit of unification. Right? Okay. There's, you know, there's not even the remote potential, you know, for anything to happen. Right? Yeah. There's no connection. Yeah.
That's a lot of bridging.
Yeah, a lot of bridging.
Something all of a sudden can seat that couldn't before.
Yeah. You know, and just, again, you've got an example of how a third circular functions, you know, the Jesus going around the Mediterranean. All right, so any differential that you can observe between the way you function and the way Jesus functioned during his Mediterranean tour, that differential is being bridged by the spirit of unification. All right? Normally, if you didn't get to the kind of functioning that Jesus was displaying there, you wouldn't have an adjuster. You couldn't have an adjuster.
So when he was born and he arrived at 6 years old, I mean, was that already functioning within him where he could get his...
Great you brought that. Yeah, well, no, I mean, I was thinking that. It's, okay. It's great that you sort of were my straight man there and teed it up. Right, so he's like, well, how did Jesus get an adjuster, you know, at a precocious, quote-unquote, age six, right? You know, getting it as like as early as you can imagine ever getting an adjuster. That's because his parents had adjusters. I mean, the qualification before Pentecost is, you know, if your parents, you know, even just one of your parents, had an adjuster, right, you can automatically get an adjuster at age six because, remember, you're actually within the mind space of your parents until 16, right?
Does that make the case for the mind connection,
yeah,
with your offspring?
Right.
Right. Definitively.
Right. If that literal mind overlap wasn't there, Jesus couldn't have gotten an adjuster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You know, that's why every child in the probationary nursery gets an adjuster at roughly age six, because they weren't resurrected in the probationary nursery unless one of their biologic parents was resurrected on the first mansion world, right? And if they're resurrected on the first mansion world, they have an adjuster, right? It's the only way they got there, right? No one without an adjuster can get to the mansion worlds, right? See, so they are in that mind womb. I mean, that's why they can't be resurrected in the probationary nursery until their parent is, right? Because they are being resurrected within the mind womb of that parent. So that's there. There's no place for the child to exist. Okay. Yeah, physically, they're on a separate, you know, world. But mindily, you know, they're inside of the, you know, the mind, effective mind womb of their biologic parent or parents. And so they get that wonderful benefit of the grace of their parent having an adjuster, and they can get an adjuster right away at age six. But if you aren't in one of those lines prior to Pentecost on this planet, you're not going to get an adjuster automatically. You've got to work your way up to third circle, or say, before you die, no matter how wonderfully you're, you know, you're behaving on the planet. You're a person and everything like that. But if you don't get an adjuster of your own, there's no soul and there's nothing to resurrect on the first mansion world. Right? Those individuals are drops of water in the ocean.
Yeah.
Those are parts of the supreme evolving, not eternal individuals.
No individual.
Right? Yeah. See, so it's not just animal phenomena that are drops of water in the supreme. I mean, even humans, without an adjuster, hence no soul, are just the fanciest drops of water in the ocean.
Right.
Right. Right. They not have no eternal individuality. They just have temporal individuality. Right. Until you have a soul, you don't even have potential eternal individuality. And of course, until you fuse, you don't have actual eternal individuality.
Right.
Yep.
Any way to conjecture as to the possible percentage of people prior to Pentecost who might have
no
third circle?
You can all wonder about this, you know, but
not many.
Remember, it's not just third circler. You know, you can't be, you know, remember, go back in, you know, in the adjuster papers and look at the prerequisites for an adjuster.
Yeah.
You know, it's third circular or things that are equivalent, plus some things that are ultimately even inscrutable to the revelators. Sometimes individuals will get an adjuster, like especially if they're just going to be a spirit fuser, they'll get an adjuster, and no one in the universe of universes has the slightest idea why that individual warranted getting an adjuster. It doesn't seem like it has anything to do with what they've done as an individual. Right. But see, transcendent of the finite, you know, there is a recognition, if you will,
right,
you know, that is genuinely a potential
right
eternal individuality.
Yeah.
Even though it's no apparent, you know, right, fact at all. So, you know, remember again, the easiest way to kind of think through that is, you know, start at eternity, you know, with all the eternal individualities, and then just downstep things until you finally get down to the finite and in time. And coincidentally, one way or another, those individuals that are there, you know, as co-absolute beings in eternity, somehow or other get an adjuster, you know. In supremacy, there are no coincidences, right? And that's kind of why. See, it's like, you know, one way or another, those individuals that are actually there,
yeah,
at the ends of eternity,
yeah,
from a time viewpoint, right, have to, you know, become a potential eternal individual somehow or other.
Yeah. Forget about appearances. It's not going to be about that.
Yeah. And again, no matter how much it might appear that a certain individual, oh, that's going to be an individual in eternity, there's no doubt about it. And then the next thing you know, they've gone to iniquity and... Right. Did anyone think for countless millions of years that Lucifer was not an eternal individual? No. Everyone thought, boy, he's going to be one of the really exemplary, you know, eternal individualities. I mean, he is like cool. Next thing you know, it's as if he had never existed.
Voted to be the most prominent.
Yes.
Right. In his class.
Right.
Top of his class.
So, you know, even very high beings know to not prejudge this stuff. The first will be last, and the last will be first. Right? The least primitive human makes it to eternity, but not Lucifer. Talk about the first will be last, and the last will be first.
He was so annoyed by that.
right. Just think how that sticks in his craw, even today. It's some Homo erectus makes it to eternity, but not him. So who's you know, hot stuff now?
How rugged a truth is that?
Yeah, that's some rugged truth. Okay, so, all right. Anyway, we digressed again. So just, you know, notice, and they're going to bring this up a little bit more. You know, you've got both the sequence of the worlds and the sequences of an individual towards fusion that, to draw from to speculate on these collective stages. All right, let's keep going.
Let it be made clear that the administrative mechanisms and governmental techniques of a universe of or a super universe cannot in any manner limit or retard the evolutionary development or spiritual progress of an individual inhabited planet or of any individual mortal on such a sphere.
Right. So the three things are parallel, but not locked together. It's like, it's not like no human can fuse until the grand universe is settled in light and life. No, Enoch fused a long time ago on this planet, and you know, we are at the very beginnings, even as a local system, right? So they're just reminding you that they're parallel, but they're not locked, you know, together. You know, you're not fated by the bigger picture, you know, be that the world you want, you're on, or the greater cosmos that you exist in, right? And again, because, you know, you can obviously understand on your part, we were just talking about it a minute ago, you have, you know, an absolute dimension to your personality, right? Yeah.
You know, they even say directly, you no can, limit can be placed on you guys.
Right. Yeah. You know, and then you bring an amplifier in of the thought adjuster, and right, I mean, there's no stopping you. You don't have to wait for the super universe to, you know, putz along. Go for it. Right? But again, right, you have to go for it in humility, right? Because you can quickly go from a righteous pursuit to a self-righteous pursuit, and it won't be apparent that you're making that shift until it's too late.
I can't believe I published that.
So it's that's the other little tricky thing in here, that it's easy for you to imagine that this path that you're going to go down is doesn't go anywhere but eternity. But remember, any path has two directions. Right? You're not forced to go in the positive direction down the path, right? And you won't have any idea that you've flipped 180 degrees when you do. Right? It's only, you know, when you go down backwards for a ways that you'll start to get this negative feedback thing happening that you need to notice. Like, wait a minute, I think I got turned around. When did that happen? Right? I need to pull back on the reins here and get myself rotated 180 degrees again, and let's more humbly try this again. Right? So you've got to have that reflective, that objective consciousness that's keeping track of that. Because subjectively, there's absolutely no difference between going in opposite directions. They feel subjectively exactly the same.
I'm on a path, I'm going forward.
It appears like I'm going forward, yeah, but you turned around. the side that your nose is on doesn't define the orientation of the universe, right? I mean, you don't define the reality, right? But we always think that as long as we're going in the direction our nose is pointing, we're going forward. It's like, wow, that's a little on the self-righteous side.
Yep.
Right, pride goeth before a fall, right? I mean, you know, pride is what, you know, leads to self-righteousness. Okay, so...
I'm glad I never
okay, so yes, you got these parallels, but you got to appreciate, bigger objective forces always make sure that the planet is, you know, is chugging along forward, in net, and in the universe is at large. But you know, the individuals, you know, is where it gets really dicey. In general, things like rebellions and default sort of just slow down the overall progress rather than turn it around. Right. You know, like they point out. I mean, you know, what might initially seem to have, where Lucifer turned the whole local system around, you know, it was quickly obvious, like, no, wow, we've so overplayed the goodness with the subsequent goodness with the initial evil that it's like no contest, right? The supreme is not reversible, right? And so the great glacier that is the evolution of the supreme, you know, tends to push everything along. You know, it's only really the individual that can just totally, you know, turn their back on that.
Free will.
You know, and go totally to oblivion.
Look good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, right, you know, righteous influences are sovereign on a planet as a whole, or, you know, a system as a whole, etc. You know, but you have absolute sovereignty of your mindal self, see, so it's a totally different situation.
Yeah, better get subordinate.
Yeah, better be very, very humble. Okay, meanwhile, back to this.
Looking at us, you'd think it wouldn't be a hard thing to do.
What was that?
You'd think, by looking at us, that humility would not be a hard thing to achieve, because if anything, you should be humble.
But again, you know, you can really deceive yourself. It can appear to you that you're humble, but you're not. So this is the tricky thing. You know, what you've got to guard against is you got to constantly remember that there's a difference between appearance and reality. Right? Reality is never as it appears. And sometimes, extremely so. Right? You know, the appearance can be opposite to the reality. Right? It appears that it's white. It's actually black. I mean, that's why there's evil. Right? Evil is taking a hold of that which appears to be white when it's really black.
Yeah.
Sin is different. That's taking hold of what you know is black. Right? But evil is the 180 degrees.
Yeah.
Right? You look at it, looks like I'm wearing a white hat. But actually, you're wearing a black hat. That's when you look in the mirror, that's not what you see.
Right, just the shading.
Right? It's 180 degrees. Okay, so so like I said, it was just there's no resistance with you because of that absolute dimension of your personality. You can, no matter how much resistance is imposed upon you, you can just tear right through it and turn yourself 180 degrees around. Right? No one can hold on to you firm enough to keep you from rotating yourself. Not even the Universal Father. No matter how much he has a grip on you, you can just break all of the all the moorings and rotate yourself 180 degrees.
He basically made it so.
Yeah. Fundamentally, it's not that no one is allowed to. No one can.
Right.
There's no one that can overrule the absolute dimension of my personality.
Right.
It's absolute, period. It's not relative to anything.
Sure is.
Okay? And you just, that's, you know, when you really think about the physics of that, it should keep you humble.
Yeah.
Right? Just how much power has been put into your ignorant hands.
That was a mistake.
Yeah. Right. Many said that. It's like, Universal Father, are you sure?
Yeah, they want you to fail fast.
Yeah.
So you can have a learning opportunity so you can gain some wisdom.
Of course.
Yeah. And for the sake of, the greater good, you know, it'd be really handy if you got yourself out of existence as quickly as possible, if that's where you really like to go.
Yeah. Right? What you're about to do quickly.
Yeah. And we'll just push the wreck off the road and keep going. Yeah.
The way it seems right to a man.
You for the,
what was that?
Harvest you for the supreme.
Right. I mean that's technically what's going on. It's just you're not technically being tossed in the nothing bin, right? It's all of the values and your personality purposing, all that goes into the God the Almighty. Yeah. That big summation of non-eternal individuals, things and beings. Okay, let's keep going here.
In some of the older universes, you find worlds settled in the fifth and the sixth stage of light and life, even far extended into the seventh epoch, whose local systems are not yet settled in light. Younger planets may delay system unification, but this does not in the least handicap the progress of an older and advanced world. Neither can environmental limitations, even on an isolated world, thwart the personal attainment of the individual mortal. Jesus of Nazareth, as a man among men, personally achieved the status of light and life over 1,900 years ago on Urantia.
I see.
As a young man.
And there, you know, definitely you see how, you know, they're just begging you to make that chart, right? It's like they're giving you every little tip. It's like, how about if we refer to fusion as achieving the status of light and life? Yeah. Does that suggest something to you? Right. Right, they're trying to get you to, you know, synthesize and recognize that chart and get that as something you can put in front of you to, you know, to reflect in the context of. Yeah. It's just like going as close to, you know, literally putting the chart on a page as they can, which obviously they weren't allowed to do. Okay, so, and again, just notice how they were talking about what I was just saying. I mean, that younger planets may delay system unification, right? You can have this retarding influence, slow things down, but, right, you're not going to stop it or reverse it, right? You know, inexorably things move forward on the grand scale. And the only thing that can stop you going either direction is you, right? Right? Once you get to sin, you can't overcome sin with goodness. You can have an infinite ministry of goodness imposed upon you. It's irrelevant. Sin is the recognition of that that's white, and you don't want that.
Right.
Right. So you can't overcome even the tiniest bit of sin with an infinite amount of goodness. Right. That's a free will thing. You know, only that individual can turn themselves around at that point. Right. You know. So, you know, in terms of expending time and money on individuals, we all need to kind of make an assessment at some point. If you decide that this individual is just in a sin mode, you might want to back off on the infinite expenditures, okay? Because that's throwing money down a hole.
Not in the budget.
Right? You know, it seems cold and heartless, but it's just the facts, right?
Purpose.
I mean, it doesn't mean that you try to foster, you know, his descent by surrounding him with darkness, right? I mean, you want to give him as much time as possible to turn himself around, but just you got to recognize only he can or she can turn themselves around, not you. You can grab them as hard as you want, you won't be able to turn them. Okay.
That's really not your business.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, just totally drain their lives trying to salvage the unsalvable. Mm-hmm. At some point, you just got to step back and, you know. You don't step infinitely back, but you just, you know, you step back from literally trying to grab them and turn them around, right? You just recognize that that's silly. Right?
Ears to hear and eyes to see.
Yeah,
that's, I was told when I was had some training the other week, one of the rules is you can't do it for them because they don't, you know, if you're doing it for them, then they're not doing it.
Yeah.
And they have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, you had more thought?
Well, they said you have to, like you're saying, just like what you're saying, is you have to take a step back, and you can interact with them and, you know, assist as they will be assisted,
mm-hmm.
You know, from a distance only.
You can't
come in and do it. You may not mm-hmm. go in and do it for them.
Yeah. It's not wise to keep yourself that intimate. You're actually
it's against the rules.
Thwarting
their
future possibilities. You're short-circuiting the ministries of God within them. You know, they're always turned outward to you, right? And not turning to what they need is a recognition inside, whoops, I am seriously turned around, right? I mean, that recognition can come from the ministry within you, right? So you got to give that space to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? And, but you're just saying, you interact with them, and no matter how negative they are with you, you always, only react to what little measures of positive there is there, that parts of child of God that are there and, like Jesus taught us. I mean, don't worry about all the, the garbage. If there's something positive that you can do in an interaction, okay.
The thing they were teaching us was, in the interaction piece with them, was to, like you often tell us, you need to encourage them to stop and reflect on why it is they think that, or why it is they think that's a good thing to do, and get them to stop and think and reflect for a time on why it is that they're doing these things. And I think, like you often say, I mean, this gives you maximum possibility of recognizing better, more objectively what you're doing.
Right. Again, you'll just, your hyperactivity with them will cloud that potential. And it's just, at some point when you recognize what they need is growth, you've got to remind yourself, you cannot cause growth in them, right? That's totally foolish, right? I mean, because the more you try to cause growth in them, the less there's any potential for them to ever grow, right? You're short-circuiting that. You've got to back off. And it's that can be very tough. Right, if it's your child,
okay,
right? To give them the space and let higher ministries than you have the potential, to speak within them. It probably means they've got to fall on their face really, really hard, and you've got to let that happen. It's very tough for a parent. But when you recognize that fundamentally what's needed is growth, there's nothing you can do. You have to hope that some circumstances, like hitting their face really hard on the pavement, will allow them to let go and supply some favorable conditions inside of them so they can be grown. Right? Until something hits them with a hammer hard enough, they won't let go of their white knuckle grip. There's no favorable conditions. There's no potential for growth. Right? So, and you can be very amazed if you actually manage to do that and some very difficult thing that doesn't kill them, befalls them. And sure enough, they don't even know they've done it. They let go. I mean, they literally hit so hard they can't, hold their grip and they let go. And in short order, some light bulbs start to go off in their mind. Right? I mean, they need the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, and the Thought Adjuster, and their angels to do something, not you, right? Don't presume that, you are a better influence than a fragment of infinity, for Pete's sake, right? Yeah, so, all right, anyway, meanwhile, back to the parallels. So you can see how they finally just, they use Jesus as an example, of this definitive parallel, and just to remind you, because we'll come back to it here in the next section, as you're going up the psychic circles, as it were, or inward in the psychic circles, fusion is at, you know, at the zeroth circle, you know, if you will, the point at the center, the concentric circles, right? And relative to the cosmos, like, huh, that's weird. Okay, that's above where we have the last cosmic mother. We'll see, we'll get to that. See, once you see these parallels, it gets people speculating, like the revelators you see, speculate about some other things that they also have no way to observe, but are just trying to speculate about. Okay, so let's finish up this and then get to the next. Oh, you got a question?
Winston asks, does having absolute will mean that we should not absolutize or make anything else a complete lifestyle
system? You know I say that all the time. You can start to recognize more and more what I was talking about. Right? I mean, you need to be very, very cautious about having this absolute certitude about something, right? You know, literally taking hold of it—that white knuckle grip of volition—and you know, just in general, you don't need to do a lot of willing right now. What you need to do is work on that consecration of mind. You're given a lot of relationship to will, you know, right from the get-go. What you need to concern yourself with most to begin with, like I mentioned, that's basically your whole task through your whole local universe ascension, right, is getting something in your mind that is appropriate to will, to purpose. Otherwise, you know, if you just start purposing stuff, right, it's all going to be error that you're purposing, if not evil. Right? You need to make sure that what you're purposing should be purposed, should be directed towards eternity, and not just thought of as a passing scaffolding element in time. Right? To will something, to purpose something, is to say, this is going to be there when I get to eternity, and nothing's going to change with that. Wow. Right. Think about how absurd that is when you just say it to yourself what you're doing there. Do you really think that's a finished object?
Yeah.
Right? Is it perfect?
Look how much looking it takes to avoid going to school at Leaping.
Right. But our planet, you know, this book is in my lap again, because our planet is filled with people that are absolutely certain that a whole bunch of things, they're finished. Right? It's a done deal. I mean, you can absolutize that puppy. I mean, it's just that's why we're, you know, driving our civilization off the cliff. Right? Okay, let's get this last paragraph in.
It is by observing what takes place on long-settled worlds that we arrive at fairly reliable conclusions as to what will happen when a whole super universe is settled in light, even if we cannot safely postulate the event of the stabilization of the seven super universes.
Okay, so they're just starting to hint at it there. A lot of times they're transitioning to the next section, you know, in the last paragraph. They're just starting to hint at something. Notice, like, huh, now wait a minute. I always thought of all seven super universes being settled in light and life, you know, simultaneously, and that's the settling of the grand universe in light and life. They actually seem to be suggesting maybe, you know, maybe you'll have a super universe settled in light and life and not yet all seven, you know, or even something kind of transcendent of that, the whole grand universe, you know, quote unquote, being settled in light and life. Where are they getting that thought? Okay, so let's go into the next section here.
12, the seventh or super universe stage. We cannot positively forecast what will occur when a super universe became settled in light, because such an event has never factualized. From the teachings of the Melchizedeks, which have never been contradicted, we infer that sweeping changes would be made in the entire organization and administration of every unit of the creations of time and space, extending from the inhabited worlds to the super universe headquarters.
Okay, so, all right, you got that basic fact, which is kind of obvious, but you can tell there's some details about their speculations that they're not allowed to reveal. You know, you can kind of see that it isn't just that paragraph they can say. You know, they've got the Melchizedek's and whatnot working on as many details. But, you know, there's not only can't they reveal such things, there's no context in this revelation to talk about such things. I mean, all the sort of entire organization, administration, you know, sweeping changes, all that stuff they're talking about there, it involves, you know, countless beings that are not even revealed in here and stuff, you know, see, so, I mean, they can't get into the details, there's no context for it. But obviously, in general, it's going to be some serious sweeping changes, right? If the whole super universe is settled in light and life, then you can at least appreciate that much. Okay, what else do they say here?
It is generally believed that large numbers of the otherwise unattached creature trinitized suns are to be assembled on the headquarters and divisional capitals of the settled super universes. This may be in anticipation of the sometime arrival of outer spacers on their way into Havona and Paradise, but we really do not know.
So again, they're reminding you of just how speculative this, you know, for everyone here. May, and we really do not know. However, see, they just thought, well, we have told them about creature trinitized suns, so we can speak to our speculations in that regard, right? And all the unrevealed beings that we speculate about, and so, you know, remember just how transcendent a phenomenon creature trinitized suns are, right? You know, you've got their super additive consequence of, you know, Paradise, Avona, natives, finaliters, so, you know, they're ceiling dwellers, you know, in many ways. So, you know, that makes sense to us. They can tell us that, and oh, yeah, that makes sense. Obviously, if you've got a super universe settled in life, settled in light and life, it's a phenomenon that's getting right up there at the ceiling of the whole finite. And so that makes sense that the creature trinitized suns would start to take on roles where they fit in more. Remember, in general, they're kind of oddballs, right? They're way ahead of the times. They don't fit in very well. But you know, obviously, they would start to fit in more and more when the domains start to take on shades of obscenity. Right? So. Yeah, so that, you know, they can give us that one little tidbit. And then this next little block of a couple of paragraphs gives us a few juicy thoughts about one of those not oft-mentioned group of beings.
Well, you skipped the whole part about anticipation of the sometime arrival of outer spacers.
Oh,
I mean,
well.
That blew me away.
Oh, okay. All right, well, remember, I skipped it because we kind of had talked about that in previous sessions, but okay, let's remind ourselves what they're talking about there. Remember, fundamentally, getting the grand universe settled in light and life is extending the central universe effectively out to encompass the super universe level. Right, so that, you know, the beings that are advancing in the first outer space level, you know, subsequent to the finite age, you know, they're going to do just what we're doing now. They're going to be initially ascending, right, working their way inward, you know, upward and inward, you know, whichever way you want to think about it. Geographically, it's literally inward, and instead of, you know, just working through the central universe proper and getting to paradise, they've got to work through that extension.
Yeah.
of a domain of perfection at the super universe level. They're going to be a whole, I mean, think of, you know, for us, we got a billion worlds, a whole rigmarole that we've got to go through just to get to paradise. I mean, who knows how complicated, you know, before they even get to the billion worlds, they're going to have to go through some incredible, a seemingly endless set of experiences to encompass, the perfected domain, and then encompass the perfect domain, and then get to the Isle of Paradise. Right. I mean,
these are absonite beings.
Right, so you got absonite beings that are, doing an ascension, starts at the center of all things. It's like we're finite beings doing that right now. And then once they achieve paradise, they're going to have some sort of a finality or like equivalent thing, that they'll be in most likely, and countless other things, because you can't just extrapolate the finite to the absonite. But they're going to then go back out after they've, in some way beeline ascended in. They're going to go out and they're going to have to, penetrate to the completeness of that whole domain. Not to mention, just to get to the super universe level, I mean, they're going to have some incredibly extensive set of experiences to go through in the first outer space level. It's gigantic, right? just one segment of it is, almost infinitely more complicated than one segment of the super universe. Right? Remember, those segments extend out. There's seven segments of the first outer space level, and the other outer space levels as well. So they'll get some sort of a completeness within their particular segment out there. That's not going to be some gigantic task. And then when they go in, will they just do the associated segment in the super universe level, or will they have to do all seven segments? Or will they only do all seven segments after they come back out? I mean, who knows?
They're going to have some.
They look at us like, well, you guys just went right to Havana.
Yeah.
Look what worked.
And look what we have to go through.
And then,
so
finite, finaliter, absoniters.
You got all the way from your nativity sphere to paradise, and I only went 10 inches in the outer space level in an equivalent span of experience. It's just going to be incredibly more complicated. There'll be a whole regime, in the super universe level that will be like all the natives in Havana and stuff, right? That minister, and that those incoming outer spacers will have super additive consequences of relationship with this all elaborate set of beings. Of course, there's going to be all kinds of absonite beings and stuff in the super universe level at that point, and plus all the geometry will have transcended finite geometry. It's all very complicated, but. But still, right? It's just, ever complexifying, expanding parallels.
It does not sound boring.
Right? I mean, think about the ascenders, that'll be starting out in the fourth outer space level.
I was thinking
of that. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, wow.
What does it mean for those kinds of lasts? What kind of firsts are going
to
come from
just to this the ascending half of their career, not to mention the subsequent half quote unquote. That's why you really shouldn't call them halves, but the first phase and the second phase, right? Even for us, and not about halves. I mean, it's a lickety split to get to paradise relative to all the time you're going to spend trying to penetrate to completion in the whole. Super universe level.
But not to get off topic, but when light life has been achieved and the Supreme God Supreme is present, we're going to be working on going out into the first outer space level as absonite beings.
Right.
We'll be more than absonite beings. We will also have the finite experience that will make us something totally different.
Right, we'll be absonite beings, but embedded within our absonite manifestation will be a finite precursor, where, a being that's just eventuated as an absonite being, doesn't have that finite nature embodied within their core.
Yeah. Nor can they ever get it.
Nor can they ever get it, right? Right. Yeah. You know, and again, the reason is if they had finite nature embedded in their core, the universe couldn't be complete because there has to be some beings that don't have that, and every variation you can think of. Right?
They'll probably want to relate to you to try to peel as much of that out of you so they can understand what that's all about as possible. So you'll probably be quite popular.
Like a master architect, if there was any finite nature embedded with them, they wouldn't be completely transcendent of the finite. They wouldn't have the totally transcendent objectivity that is the framework in which the finite can be brought into existence. Remember, the kind of the most truthful way to think about things is you start with the absolute, then you produce the absolute, and then you produce the finite. Again, it appears that it's the opposite, but that's just an appearance, in many ways. It's more a reality that it's the other way around. Right? And we're just about to read about some beings that couldn't exist if it wasn't more fundamentally the other way around, that the absolute comes before the finite.
Yeah.
If that wasn't so, these beings that they're about to tell us about couldn't exist. Okay.
If and when a superuniverse should be settled in light and life, we believe that the now advisory, unqualified supervisors of the Supreme would become the high administrative body on the headquarters world of the superuniverse. These are the personalities who are able to contact directly with the absonite administrators, who will forthwith become active in the settled superuniverse. Although these unqualified supervisors have long functioned as advisors and counselors in advanced evolutionary units of creation, they do not assume administrative responsibilities until the authority of the Supreme Being becomes sovereign.
Why don't you read that other paragraph too, and we'll talk about the whole thing together.
The unqualified supervisors of the Supreme who function more extensively during this epoch are not finite, absonite, ultimate, or infinite. They are supremacy and only represent God the Supreme. They are the personalization of time-space supremacy and therefore do not function in Havona. They function only as supreme unifiers. They may possibly be involved in the technique of universe reflectivity, but we are not certain.
Okay, so let's start the basics. So, you may remember, if you're extensively familiar with the Revelation, there's a couple other just passing references, three others, I think, outside of this little block of two paragraphs here, to the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme. They're not completely unrevealed. They can give us a few tidbits about them. So that's another example of something that we're being told about that's pretty advanced. So who are the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme? Basically, they are associates of the Supreme Being. Okay? They are his deputies, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay? It's like, well, wait a minute, how could they be his deputy? There is no Supreme Being. And just take that immediate point first. The only other list mention of them is up in section 7 of paper 117. That's single column, page 1291. I think I'll just read this little block. So there in old single column, page 1291, you see that section 7, the future of the Supreme. And they start out talking about this issue of not just looking at things from the bottom up, but, you know, needing to look at it from the top down as well to really understand what's going on. And seeing that item number one, you know, there, that's what the one, you know, the third paragraph in that section. It says, the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme could hardly be deitized at any stage prior to his, the Supreme Being's, completed evolution, and yet these same supervisors even now qualifiedly exercise the sovereignty of supremacy concerning the universes settled in light and life. Okay, and that qualifiedly exercise, you know, we just saw that, you know, about how they do not assume administrative responsibilities until the authority of the Supreme Being becomes sovereign. And, you know, they start out as, how do they describe it there? Where in the heck was that? Advisory, you know, unqualified supervisors. Didn't they say something else? Was it?
Advisors and counselors.
Yeah, where was that?
Just in the first paragraph.
Is it in the first paragraph? Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, right there. Right before the, yeah, or right next to the second reference. Right, see, although these unqualified supervisors have long functioned as advisors and counselors, right, see, so that's the qualified exercising of their sovereignty. Mm-hmm. Right, but they're, it's like they're pointing out there, I mean, if, you know, from a time viewpoint, bottom-up viewpoint, you can't have unqualified supervisors until you have the Supreme Being. And you don't have the Supreme Being yet, therefore you can't have the unqualified supervisors, but
voila.
There they are. Right. You got to look at it from the eternity viewpoint, from the top down, right, where the Supreme Being is already in existence.
Antecedent following.
Right, yeah, the antecedent following sort of a thing, quote unquote, yes. And, you know, the Supreme Being, as the He, can't directly express in the finite. Because, I mean, that's an absentite being. And you notice that they made a point of saying about the unqualified supervisors here back in paper 55 that they're not finite, absentite, ultimate, or infinite. They are supremacy. So they're not above, you know, you got the finite domain, you got the supreme domain, and then you have the absentite domain above that. Right? They're not up there, you know, in the absentite. They're in the boundary between the absentite and the finite. Right? So they have a relationship both directions. Right? They can manifest in the finite, and like they said there, see if I can find that again. I lose all these points where they mention it. Where did they say that they're the ones that can interact with the absentite? Somewhere. Oh, yeah, yeah. These are the personalities who are able to contact directly with the absentite administrators.
Right.
Right? Where if you have a super universe settled in light and life, you know, those absentite administrators who will forthwith become active in the settled super universe. Mm-hmm. I see. So they can interact both directions. Mm-hmm. Okay, up and down. And then the other little zinger that you've got to notice, if you put what they say in our two paragraphs we just read, line with the one I just read, okay, in each of the two paragraphs that we read, notice they called them personalities, they are personalization of time-space supremacy. Okay, so they're personalities. And what did you just get up here in paper 117? Could hardly be deitized. Their personalized deity, right. Their God. Right. And who knows how many there are. It feels like there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right? Every one of them is a God.
They're not evolved.
Right? You know, you think there's a lot of creator sons. You know, hence a lot of gods.
Oh,
think about all these. Right? There's lots and lots of personalizations of deity. There's lots and lots of gods. Okay. And each has their delegated part of the picture. Right? You don't just have one magical God doing everything. Right? The Universal Father has delegated all godness that he could delegate. So he's way outnumbered in terms of godness.
You're talking about all these gods. So when we think about God from our limited perspective, are we reaching to the Universal Father? But because of our limited sight, we just see, you know, as far as, I don't know, as far as Jesus?
Yes, in terms of just looking along that narrow line that ends at God the Father, right now, you actually can't get past that very downstepped and blended with other facts, you know, of our local universe Father. Right? And just theoretically, as a finite being, you literally can't penetrate past the Supreme Father. Right? You can't remotely get to any Father past that, let alone all the way to the end of the Universal Father, in any sort of a direct way.
So as far as your personal relationship, get comfortable with that.
Yeah.
But as far as your general understanding, being objective and trying to get a clue about the cosmic perspective, the top-down perspective, then we can use the bigger understanding to get a clue.
Right. I mean, the way that you can kind of precisely sort out what's going on with you then is, because you were given a personality by that Universal Father all the way at the end, you can conceive of the ideal of the Universal Father. But remember, you can't, at the very, very best, the highest idea of fatherhood that you could ever have is technically only the idea of the Supreme Father. You're completely incapable of any idea transcendent of the Supreme Father, you know, which is an infinite distance from the Universal Father. Right?
But in my imagination.
Right. And that's why, you know, in the Urantia book, right, they're trying, like I keep pointing out, from the very first paragraph to the very last sentence, they say, okay, let's assume that you have some genuine recognition of ideals, like the ideal of the Universal Father, his infinite and eternal nature. And that's it. That's the ideal of the Universal Father. You can state it in pretty short terms. You got to recognize that no one on the planet has, you know, an idea that's even worthy of the fatherhood of the Creator Son. You have some horrendously crude idea, you know, of just some magic man, right, is your idea of the Universal Father. You know, so if you combine such a primitive idea of the Universal Father with that ideal of the Universal Father, you have this horrendous dissonance within you. Okay? That we've reached a point in the evolution of this planet that we no longer can go forward with that horrendous gulf between the ideal and the idea. And that's why this book is here. You know, start with trying to improve your idea of the Universal Father. And of course, in order to do that, you have to bring in almost an infinite number of other ideas, like all these other gods. Because unless you have some idea of all them, you're never going to get the proper idea of the Universal Father. You're going to have things that aren't the Universal Father balled into the Universal Father. Right? Right now we've got everything in one God. Right? And that is almost infinitely false. Right? Most is not the Universal Father. And like we were just pointing out, everything that you're, in terms of an idea of the Universal Father you have right now, is not the Universal Father. Okay? Without revelation, you can't get past the Supreme Father, even in potential. Right? Yeah. That's as far as appearance can penetrate, even, you know, into remotes of potential. And so anything beyond the veil of that, you know, of your appearance, beyond the Supreme Father, has to be revealed to you. And once they do that, like we're just recognizing there, holy Toledo, right? Holy mackerel, whatever exclamation you want to bring in here. Yeah, we could even use the German, Ach du meine Güte, right? It's kind of appropriate right here. It's so complicated, you know, beyond anything any human has ever imagined. And to not let that complication descend into some primitive polytheism in your head, right? Or instead of having one magic man, you have a whole assortment of magic men and women, right? Yeah, like, you know, lots of people's, you know, in the past at least. Right, so that's, but, you know, it's just, you know, one of the things that you slowly start to recognize is, it's like, well, is the Universal Father this? You know, and you're studying the book. Oh, no, that's an unqualified supervisor of the Supreme. Well, is the Universal Father that? No, that's an Ancient of Days. Okay, well, is the Universal, you know, and the only way to really get to the Universal Father is by exhaustion. Right? To start to figure out all the things that he isn't, and then to figure out what's left, right? See, and remember, he divested himself of everything possible. He's the smallest circle in the Venn diagram, right? The only way to get to him is to peel away everything else, and he's this tiny little nugget in the center, right? Even when you get to the Isle of Paradise, you gotta. You know, separate the functioning of the Paradise Trinity, and you still aren't there. So, you know, everything there is everything you ever imagined that God the Father was. Okay, he's none of that. Okay, peel that away, and then you've got God the Spirit. Oh, that's everything I thought the Father was. You got to peel all that away, right? And then God the Son. Finally, you peel all that away, and finally, you're down to the smallest circle in the Venn diagram at the center of the Isle of Paradise. That's the Father, right? He's nothing that you think he is. you know, right now, you've misapplied that to all this other stuff. Right? And that's the humble thing that you want to slowly recognize. See, so to finally get a proper idea of the Father, you have to simultaneously have an idea of all this almost infinite number of other things. He's not a divine counselor. He's not an eternal of days. He's not an archangel. He's not... I mean, it's never, he's not a master physical controller. All these things that you might think he is. He's not even the Almighty. Right? all these things. Yeah, no, he's not that. He's not that. He's not that. He's not anything that any human has ever thought. That's the trick. You peel away all the onion layers and actually get some valid idea of the Universal Father, which is going to be completely abstract. Right? Anything that's tangible that you've tried to extrapolate, no, he's not that. He's the most abstract thing. He's more abstract than anyone has ever abstracted. Right? That's the tricky thing. Okay, so just one little side note, these unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, you know, they're because they're obviously very transcendent beings. It's not like, you know, you can walk up and shake hands with them and say hi. You know, they remind you that they're, you know, that's way back in, what is that paper? That's paper 15, isn't it? Paper 15. You don't have to turn there, but you may remember that when they're talking about the rulers of the super universes, you know, they're talking about the ones that are tangible. And then there's a residual group that they've mentioned, at least in the book, that you can't have any sort of a direct conversation with. The only way that you can interact with them, you know, in that communicative sort of way, is via the reflective image aids, right, who become the face for various beings. You know, and there's that list there. And the first one in the list is the reflective image aids will provide a face, a voice for the Universal Mother. And then the next in the list is the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme. You know, and then there's other things like the qualified vicegerents of the Ultimate and what have you, right? Right. But we just remind you of that other reference there you know, which just speaks to this bit about how they are very much of these very late stages, right? They don't really have any sort of an intimate place until things have evolved up to them, right? Until you're literally up there at the ceiling of the finite, you know, so that you can, you know, have an intimate contact, right? Okay. All right, so that, I think that probably gets almost everything except the last little tidbit, which is juicy. Let's see, make sure I haven't skipped something. Oh, yeah, just one of the, you know, if it didn't sink in, like they mentioned, you know, when you start to get, you know, like to the point of a local universe settled in light and life, and everything that's settled, you know, within that local universe, like we mentioned earlier, you know, you're there in the wholeness of let me remind you again by just pulling this out. Okay, remember, you're getting up, and that local universe settled in light and life, you know, is that fourth stage sort of a thing. And you remember how we were pointing out that was predicated, you know, the notch below on the wholeness being the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. Okay. Yes, and those are, that's that womb of mind that's right up there against the ceiling. Okay. All right, anyway. Okay, so. Right, so all of that fits together, you know, the fact that they're ceiling dwellers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they start to become these advisors and counselors, you know, when you've got a local universe settled in light and life and that sort of sophistication of settledness. Okay, and then that last thing, they function only as supreme unifiers, and then it says, they another one of these, you know, they can't say it definitive because they haven't been able to prove it in any direct way. They may possibly be involved in the technique of universe reflectivity, but we are not certain. Okay. Well, they wouldn't have said that if this is just, you know, they aren't just pulling this out of thin air.
Yeah, really.
Right. Okay. When you unpack the central universe, like I've finally gotten the point of being able to do, sure enough, one of the things that comes out of that is you figure out the full system of beings that are involved in the reflectivity mechanism, right? From the lowest to the highest. It's a very complex phenomenon involving a whole complexity in the central universe and a whole complexity outside of the central universe. There's this vast array of beings, and the unqualified supervisors are supreme. You know, fill one of the boxes, if you will, in that structure. Inescapably, they're obviously the ones that go in that box. All right. They're speaking to that fact. Right? The same deductive thing that I've done, you know, they did long ago. And so it certainly appears from that deductive reasoning that they are involved in the technique of universe reflectivity. Right? But as you can see by how intangible they are, it's not like, you know, you can directly get a microscope on this and, yep, sure enough, I can see the physics right there, right? Yeah. Right. But it definitely appears that they are. You know, if they're not, you know, everyone, including the Revelators, are missing something really important. But that's what they're referring to there. But again, it's that, you know, extreme humility, you know, that they always betray. That they're not going to be definitive unless they've literally gotten their hands on the physics, the mechanics of what's going on, and, you know, can point to all the causality of it and say, yeah, okay, this is tangibly definitive. Right? If there's any intangibility, they'll qualify. You know, yeah. No matter how much it seems like it's completely absurd to think anything else could be this, you know, be possible. Right. Right. You know, so we all have to be reminded of that, that, you know, like they'll occasionally say, who knows what's going to happen when the you know, grand universe gets closer to being settled in light and life. There's going to be all kinds of beings that are coming into existence that no one has even remotely imagined yet, and all this sort of stuff. So, okay, but anyway, you can, you know, deduce what they're alluding to there in that sentence, their relationship to universe reflectivity. That's one of the main reasons why there's a lot of beings that are just mentioned in a list, nothing else is said about them. They're basically the beings you need to fill out that reflectivity structure. Yeah. Okay, final paragraph here, and read the byline at the end too.
None of us entertain a satisfactory concept of what will happen when the grand universe, the seven super universes as dependent on Havona, becomes entirely settled in light and life. That event will undoubtedly be the most profound occurrence in the annals of eternity since the appearance of the central universe. There are those who hold that the Supreme Being himself will emerge from the Havona mystery, enshrouding his spirit person, and will become residential on the headquarters of the seventh super universe as the almighty and experiential sovereign of the perfected creations of time and space. But we really do not know. Presented by a mighty messenger temporarily assigned to the Archangel Council on Urantia.
In the byline, you go, oh, yeah, another little hint about the Archangel stuff here, right? You know, that there's an Archangel Council, quote unquote. Okay, so you see, you know, you had a large paragraph break before that final paragraph. You see how they're definitely suggesting that it appears to us that it's one thing to get a super universe settled in light and life. It's a subsequent stage to get the grand universe settled in light and life, right? That the two aren't the same. Okay, and like I was pointing out, you can just see that, you know, once you followed, you know, all the suggestions in the book and actually have this chart in front of you, you know, the psychic circles and the sevenfold, you know, just go up the chart. It's like, remember, okay, the system settled in light and life, that's, you know, on cosmic level one here with the creative mother spirit. Right, then you go up another notch, that's the constellation settled in light and life. Another notch, that's the local universe settled in light and life, like I just reminded you about the creative mother agencies. And then the next notch up, that's the minor sector, you know, there with the almighty supreme, stuff like we talked about. Right? Up another notch, that's the major sector. Up another notch, that's the super universe settled in light and life. It's like, oh, I'm not to the top of the chart. All right? There's this seventh level of the sevenfold. Yeah. Now, there isn't a cosmic mother there. Right? And so, you know, when they say, none of us entertain a satisfactory concept of what will happen, right? Because at that point, you know, you're beginning to transcend the seven, you know, the facet of deity is called the sevenfold, that deity related to the finite. And so this chart begins to, you know, you begin to transcend this chart. Yep. Right? And that's why there's this gray box here, right, that you just kind of put a little reminder that, you know, as a parallel to these other facets of the Father, you know, you've got that facet called the infinite upholder, but okay, but it's not literally one of the cosmic mothers. Right, so you kind of go into the mystery of the gray box there, but you know, you got that other level, you know. And again, remember, you know, like on this level, the sevenfold creators, you have the universal Father. That's not the universal Father as an infinite being. That's the universal Father in the sevenfold. Yeah. This is the eternal Son in the sevenfold. This is the conjoint actor in the sevenfold, et cetera. Okay. Right. So, you know, you begin to transcend the finite when the grand universe is settled in light and life, right? See, so you transcend this chart. Right? The sevenfold relative to obscenity doesn't look like this. Right? Everything has changed. But see, that's the thing that really makes you suspicious, is making them suspicious. It's like, well, I think maybe there's a differential between a super universe being settled on light and life and the whole grand universe. Because we've got two levels there, not one. Okay? Right, so that's what's behind fundamentally driving their speculation, is that chart. Right, that they've got in front of them, too. And then the other little fun thing that they slip in there, you notice how they made a point of reminding you that we're talking about the grand universe settled in light and life. That's not just the super universe level. You got to also remember about the reflection, the reciprocal reflection of the super universe level in Havona. Remember, Havona changed when you established the super universe level. Right? There's two elements to this whole finite picture on the two sides, inside and outside the central universe, okay? And they're referring to that in passing when they say, there are those who hold that the Supreme Being himself will emerge from the Havona mystery enshrouding his spirit person. Okay, and then maybe do the second part first, you know, and then that whole bit about how you'll become resident on Universa, you know, that speculation. And remember why that's there, because the seventh master spirit has this intimacy to the Trinity, and the Trinity is involved in the spirit personal nature of the Supreme Being. Okay, but what are they talking about? The will emerge from the Havona mystery and shrouding his spirit person. Okay, we often talk about how out in the super universe domain, you know, is where you kind of think of this existing, there's the universal mother. There's, when you downstep the Supreme Being into the finite, you get two individualities. You get the Almighty Supreme and the universal mother. The Almighty Supreme is the power pattern aspect. The universal mother is the personal purposive fact. Okay? They're talking about spirit person here. I guess I need the chart again. Just to remind you, one of the things I put on the chart there, I didn't just say the universal mother there on that line. I put in parentheses the finite upholder. Okay. Technically, what they're reminding you of is, out here, that presence that you call the finite upholder, the reciprocal fact in the central universe is the Supreme Spirit. Okay? Neither are persons directly, right? But you have these reciprocal presences. One you call the Supreme Spirit, you know, focalized on the sixth circuit of Havona. Yeah. And like you remember, if you're about the circles, you know, that's where you get in touch with supremacy and stuff, right? On the sixth circuit. Okay. So see, that's what they see, the Havona mystery enshrouding his spirit person. You know, speaking of the Supreme Spirit, but it's not all there. I mean, part of that fact is also out here is the finite upholder, or the universal mother. You know, you're really integrating those two things together. That's why they reminded you, grand universe, the seven super universes as dependent on Havona.
Yep.
See? That's why they threw in that parenthetical, because you got to think about the two together. You know, like just in terms of the Supreme Being, you don't just have to bring the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme together, but just thinking about the spirit person part of the Supreme Being, right? You've got to bring the Supreme Spirit in the central universe in Havona and the finite upholder in the super universe level together, right? And that gives you the spirit person part of the Supreme Being, right? And then kind of the body, if you will, you know, is the Almighty part. But yeah, see, that's what they're referring to, and that comes out when you start unpacking deity. You know, those issues of exactly what's the finite upholder, and you know how the reciprocal is the Supreme Spirit, and that's all part of unpacking deity. They throw out stuff like that in passing, that until you've done all this unpacking, you know, you don't even really know exactly what they're talking about there. But once you've got it, it's like, oh yeah, I know what they're talking about there. I've figured that all out. Yeah, so, yeah, it's not that it's easy to hold all that stuff in your head. I mean, even for me, but, yeah, it's there. It just methodically comes out as you step through unpacking stuff. You know, you eventually recognize, oh, you don't just have an infinite upholder. You've got an absolute upholder, an absolute upholder, a finite upholder, right? And that comes out. And, you know, you don't just have the absolute spirit, right, the eternal Son. You've got the ultimate spirit, the supreme spirit. You've got all of these hierarchies, right, that naturally come out of the unpacking. And you put the pieces together. Okay. All right, we've got to wrap up. We've gone way over just doing that last paragraph. So that's just boom. Now we're done with that, and we'll move on to the final paper here of part two. Start that next time. So they've stepped you up the hierarchy with some quasi detail, getting thinner and thinner the higher you go. But now that we've kind of gotten all the way up to as high a height as you can imagine, right, they want to have this final paper that's really speaking to the most generalized big picture discussion about the universe of universes. See, so that's what we go into in that final paper. All right. There isn't anything else. Let's take a moment here, everyone.